This is The Topic is Trek, Episode 7, for October 13th, 2017. Taking Discovery out for a spin. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already! Well, hello, 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 everyone. My name is Clinton, and I'm one of your co-hosts on The Topic is Trek. And beaming in to join me, as always, are Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
Shouldn't that be Captain Clinton Alvord? That would make me First Officer Chuck Tomasi, and Craig's always behind the scenes, so he's the Chief Engineer.
I kind of think of myself as an admiral, but, whatever works.
And I got a stupid field promotion. And I got a field promotion.
You did. And I stand out in your field.
I happen to be wearing a red shirt tonight. That's not good.
That is really bad.
I wasn't listening to the end of the last show when we said, don't put on the red shirt.
No.
That's why
in Discovery they're all wearing blue, so no one has red, I guess. And yet it doesn't stop them from getting killed. Oh, but we'll get to spoil. By the way, I do want to mention up front that as with last time, we're going to be talking about new episodes of Discovery, so that if you have not seen it. So if you have not seen the episodes, stop.
Drop watch, and roll.
And then roll back over here. See, finish playing the episode. And how are you gentlemen doing this evening?
Excellent.
I'm sorry. I was confused. You said gentlemen. I'm doing fine. I'm doing great, man.
Myself as well. Getting ready for the Halloween season by doing absolutely nothing. So I don't know.
Oh, wait a minute. There was an empty silence there. Oh, how are you doing, Clinton?
I'm just doing one. Thank you so much for asking.
Please respond with one of the following. This?
Check
this. Yeah. Or do you feel like this?
I guess more the former at this point. I had my daily dose of quetiapine, and so I'm feeling pretty good.
There's too much fiber in that stuff for
there
me.
It is. Too much fiber. But everything's all fuzzy. So anyway, it's time to move on to subspace chatter. Gentlemen, we're going to tap into the subspace chatter and see what's happening in and around the Trek universe. These are stories from here, there, and everywhere. And first up is Mr. Craig Stepp.
Yes. And for pre-discovery discussion, and actually now it's post-discovery, I guess, this is an article from ZDNet, about about 14 unofficial Star Trek, or as we say, fan films. And I noticed as I went through some of these that some of the older ones, they're gone. I think a lot of it has to do with not necessarily just the age and disinterest. It's just that they were scared about Paramount. There was a couple of them. I said under construction, where clearly the article here said, we had one or two episodes. So let's go through them real quick. I'll kind of buzz through them so we don't spend too much time on it.
Dead, not but dead, in other words.
I'm going to go through them all. You can look them up. And the ones that I remember that aren't around anymore, I'll point out. All right, so we got Star Trek Renegades, which that was, that has at least one episode, I think. And it premiered, it premiered a while back. So, and it's been around for a while. And it has,
doesn't it have Walter and Michelle in that one?
Yes. And what's the gentleman that played Tuvok?
Tim Russ.
Yes, Tim Russ. Thank you. That's what I was trying to think of at first. Anyway, he's on there as well.
And I think is this the one that has since changed to just being Renegades? That's no longer.
Yeah, it's no longer Star Trek. I think they even went so far as to try and remove the Delta Shields from uniforms and stuff.
Wow.
Which, yeah. But it's like, okay, do you do that or do you take the whole thing offline after they've done all this work? So yeah, anyway. Oh, here we go. I'm sorry. Tim Russ, Robert Ricardo is on here. Okay. Robert Beltran, who was Chakotay, Aaron Eisenberg, Terry Farrell. You know, I honestly have not watched this. This is one I have not seen. Sarek Lofton is Jake Sisko, and Nichelle Nichols. And who we know her from? I see her in something.
The name is familiar, but
who was that? Michelle who?
Yeah, Michelle Nichols. I don't know. All right. Then we got the next one is the Star Trek Phase 2, which ran for quite a while. And it had Walter Koenig did star in an episode in it. So did George Takei. Grace Lee Whitney was in there and Denise Crosby. And I thought it was pretty good. The set, of course, is great. And this is the same set than the Ticonderoga. Can't say that damn name.
Ticonderoga.
Place in New York?
Yeah. It sounds like a racetrack. Ticonderoga. There you go. I don't know.
Did you ever read the label on your pencil when you were a kid?
Is that where the pencils came from?
Yeah, Ticonderoga number 2.
Dixon Ticonderoga number 2. Anyway, whoa, we're way off because on this show.
Yeah, because the topic is Trek.
That's right.
Not pencils.
I think we need another stinger for that. All right, so the next one, Star Trek Phase 2, which I thought was well done. Then we got the Orville, which yes. You know, has TNG references or styles all across it.
Really? Hadn't noticed.
Slightly. Yeah, TNG era.
We'll have to talk about that sometime.
Indeed.
There. Hey, what? Hey, wait till the topic is Orville.
Hey.
Doesn't roll off the tongue quite as.
Topic is Orville.
The Redenbacher. Oratory is Orville.
Yeah. So, anyway, I like the show, and I don't know about you guys. I have a feeling I know where Clinton lies on this. But I like the show, and I try to kind of separate it from Star Trek to a degree.
It's growing on me.
Yeah. The last episode,
I think they're toning down and toning up some stuff, and that, you know, so I'm hanging in there. You know, I felt like, well, we won't get into that because the topic is Trek, but I'm hanging in to see how it's going.
Just to say, the last episode I thought had some hilarious moments in it.
With the practical leg. Jokes?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. All right. So you know about the Orville. We hear about that. All right. Then there's Star Trek Phoenix.
Is that anywhere around here?
No.
Star Trek Phoenix, Arizona. No. So it's set 42 years after Star Trek Nemesis, and it introduces the USS Phoenix on a rescue mission in the neutral zone. And there is one episode, and I'm not sure if it's even available anymore. Anyway, you can go check that out and go look into it. Let's go to the next one. Star Trek Hidden Frontier. I've seen that a little bit before.
50 episodes. Oh, my goodness.
They have 50 episodes. That's correct. I don't know how they pulled that off. Somebody doesn't have a job.
Well, this is their job.
I guess so. So I think this is the series that it looks like everybody kind of filmed their own wherever they lived and somebody edited it together. You know, green screen kind of thing. Then we had Star Trek Exeter, which was one of the first fan films like this I saw, and I was riveted. I was like, look at the set, because they did a good job recreating the TOS style set. And it had some good stuff. I thought the acting was probably a little bit not bad. Let's put it this way. It's not bad. It's not bad. It's a fan film. I get what I paid for, right? So this is a good series. And then I ended up finding Phase 2 and so on and so forth. But Exeter was really good. I liked it. Prelude to Axanar, which is probably all we're going to get of the Axanar movie. Well, I don't know.
They say that they're doing their I think they're doing the 30-minute deal. I think they're doing the 15 and 15, which they're allowed to do.
Really? Okay. Okay. Well, that's interesting. I didn't know that. So Prelude to XNR is nice. This is more of a documentary style, getting you ready for the movie. And it's talking to the main characters and their perspectives on this whole thing. It's almost like an interview style documentary leading up to the movie. Or actually, I guess, when would it take place? Before the movie? After? Anyway, you get the idea. It kind of sets everything up. Then there is Star Trek of Gods and Men, and I've seen this a while back, and it had Walter Koenig, Grace Lee Whitney, Nichelle Nichols, and Tim Russ was also in this. And I think this is where kind of Renegades came from. I think they all had a good time working with each other, and they went on to Renegades. Star Trek Farragut, another one. Let's see, how many episodes did they say there?
Eight-ish.
They kind of peter out on that last one. Star Trek Horizon. And then, of course, Star Trek Continues. I have to admit, this is probably one of my favorite of the fan films because it's so well done. Star Trek Dark Armada, which I thought their uniforms were all kind of weird.
They're different, but I kind of like them.
Yeah, no, I mean, some of the collars looked a little weird when they were wearing them. I don't know where they bought them at. And actually, I love the style of that ship, which is like the USS Rhode Island. If y'all remember that from Voyager, I like that style, that kind of, it's somewhere between Voyager and the Enterprise E look. Just my observation.
With the deflector screen in front so big it looks like they should be showing movies on it, like it's an IMAX screen.
Yeah, they pull up to an asteroid and they project the movie on the asteroid. No, I like the saucer section. It's more of a triangle shape, and it does have the dish in the front. But I always also like the style of the nacelles from the Enterprise E. So, I saw a model the other day, and it was on the Tested channel, Tested with Adam Savage and everybody, and they were interviewing a guy about models, which some of the models just blew me away. And they're like they're diecast models of all the starships. Well, there's other things on their site, other science fiction and other props and stuff like that. But these are little diecast starships, and they've done about every starship you can imagine from the starship from the whole Star Trek canon. Yeah, everything from the alternative Voyager to the USS Rhode Island to whatever. Anyway, maybe I should put a link to that in the show notes so you can go check it out. Then there's Star Trek Intrepid, which I guess it's a take off the Intrepid class, which is what Voyager is. And then there's Star Trek Odyssey.
Wait, hang on. I should hope that it was a take off of the Intrepid class ship, because the Intrepid Vulcan ship is the one that blew up.
That would suck.
It's a really short film.
Quick, send Spock a psychic message. We're all going to die.
Yeah, engage. Anyway, so Star Trek Odyssey is another one. I'm going to kind of buzz through this last one. And Star Trek Stalled Trek, A Mutt Time.
Okay.
And it's like puppets or something. I couldn't find the video. It said, click here, and it took me to their Facebook page. And I didn't see the video immediately. So I may go dig around for that a little bit. I may not.
A rousing endorsement for that.
No. I don't know. I might. So there you go. And there's, of course, fan films all over the place. And I took a link from the end of this article where they pointed to a Wikipedia page that has a list of Star Trek fan films, which includes these and many more. So you'll find that in our show notes.
Very good. Very good. And for something a little different, we're going to turn things over to Chuck.
I'm sorry. There's no more time. Craig took it all up.
No!
Wait, we can just travel back into time, and we got more time.
Slingshot
around the sun. Let's go.
It's easy, kids. Come on.
Wait.
All the cool kids are doing it.
I might be able
they're not cool if they're going around the sun. They're kind of hot. But
might be able to help you with that.
That's hot.
Yeah. Where is it? Here. No, it's a not working.
No. He's putting us onto the surface of the sun. Good job.
No, that would be Star Trek Phoenix.
Hey, see what you did there.
This story comes to us from TrekCore.com, the blog. Hallmark continued to showcase its plans for 2018 Star Trek keepsake ornaments at New York Comic Con this past weekend, whenever this past weekend was. Following up on the previous reveals from earlier this year, first, they have a scene from The Naked Time, and it's got Sulu with his shirt off doing the sword thing, and I don't know, Kirk is kind of breakdancing or something.
Oh my.
Hey, this is from their forthcoming USS Discovery Ornament Showcase in September. They also have, these are mock-ups. If you follow the links through the show notes, you will find them. Don't be surprised. They look like paper. They are the paper mock-ups. These are not the real ornaments. So you'd be going, wow, Hallmark really cheaped out on these this time.
Yeah.
And they still want $50.
Right.
Limited edition. How does that work?
So they're coming out with a Star Trek Discovery. I assume there's going to be a Discovery pizza cutter very soon based on the size of the shape of the...
They're all Discovery pizza cutters, actually, when you think about it.
You're right.
You're right.
They all spin. This one makes sense.
What I want to know is often the Hallmark... Will, does the Hallmark ornament spin? Do the two sections spin in opposite directions when you power it up? That's all
right.
They have.
So when it does spin, are the people plastered against the wall like one of those carnival rides?
Yeah, we have one called the Oaken Bucket at Carowinds. You would just lean up against the ones you'd lean up against the side.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yep. We call that the washing machine at Great America. Or the dryer.
I just go
into
the washing machine to do that. It's,
well, it's fun because you go on the water rides, get all wet, and then you go on this thing, and you dry off. It was like a tumble dry. Anyway, off topic. Hey,
By the way. By the way, when you said pizza cutter, I immediately thought, that's what it is. I was like, why did I recognize that in the show when it started spinning? That looks familiar.
You know Think Geek is working on that already.
Oh, absolutely.
They already have the Enterprise one, but this is even
better.
That's
what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. As soon as it started to spin, I went, why does that seem familiar? Until you just said that, I went, that's why.
And you can cut, you know, with the large circle, or you can remove that and cut with the smaller circle.
If you want smaller pieces of pizza.
Yeah, exactly. Wait, that's not how it works.
Pizza bites.
We'll talk about something else that I jumped the gun. Donna gave me another one of those. How did you know they were going to say that when we start talking about latest episodes of Discovery? So hang on to that thought. They also have a TOS tricorder coming that is absolutely beautiful. I'd love to see this. And I'm sure they'll charge an arm and a leg. So you can look forward to those from Hallmark. They're like Bob Barker on The Price is Right. All this in the Showcase Showdown.
And I believe, I know that the ones for 2017 were in the stores like in July. So these things, look for them early. Don't look for them at Christmas next year because they'll be gone at that point.
Oh, absolutely.
Look for them much earlier. All right, moving on to an unexpected place, the Goldbergs.
That is unexpected.
This comes to us from the Hollywood Reporter. The Goldbergs to debate Star Trek versus Star Wars in 100th episode. Leia Thompson, yes, that Leia Thompson, returns to direct the landmark episode, which will be Halloween themed. ABC's The Goldbergs is going to celebrate its 100th episode in the most on-brand fashion ever by taking on one of sci-fi's biggest debates. The landmark episode titled Trek Wars will debate two of the genre's biggest hits, Star Trek versus Star Wars. In the episode, Adam is sure he's found his soulmate in his girlfriend Jackie, but he's stunned when their first Halloween together reveals that she's a Star Trek fan while he's devoted to Star Wars.
Can't we all just get along?
No, we can't. The ultimate geek dispute.
Isn't there room in your heart for everybody?
No, you have to have the drama. The drama is involved here. What's interesting is I've only seen a couple of episodes of The Goldbergs, and they talk about it being 1980-something.
Yes.
They never pin it down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you would have to frame this debate really carefully to not pin it down to a year. What you mention and what you don't mention in defense of one of the other these franchises is really going to pin down when this took place.
Yeah, so it would either be Khan-ish or TNG-ish.
Well,
if
right.
you introduce well, TNG, you already put it in like 87 and later.
Yeah.
So if you talk about, you know, Star Trek VI, then it's 86. If you talk about right. Star Trek, so
yeah,
so they're going to have to, I guess my guess is what they would do is they would just kind of keep it at a much higher level and talk about characters or something. So you yes. couldn't pin it down to things that they're talking about.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I don't know if you said you've seen a couple episodes.
Yeah.
This is a family show for us. We watch okay. this every week. And I'm happy it just came back on because, you know, the fall TV season's kicking in. But yes, I love the show. And I can't wait to see how they do attack the story. When I read that, I went, oh, it's on the Goldbergs. They're going to do this. So this
well,
is
cool. However, I will point out that the Goldbergs is on ABC. And who owns ABC? Disney. And what else does Disney own?
Oh,
Lucasfilms.
Yep.
So we'll see how this goes.
I'll tell you what else I'm interested in is at the end of each episode. Well, first off, Adam F. Goldberg, the guy that runs the show, the show is loosely about him and his family. All the videos, all the content, a lot of the content the stories come from are from his childhood. He recorded with the video camera all the time, just right. like you would see a vlogger and everything now. So at the end of the episode, you see sometimes they'll show a sliver of the video and you go, oh, that's where he did do that or whatever. So I'm curious to see what they show at the end of that one.
Yeah, but if you see him and his brother walking down the street and one is Star Wars and one is Star Trek, you've learned nothing.
I know, right?
All right, let's move on from there to another story from Craig.
Yes, another story from me. And this one, I did not realize, Adam Savage is doing a podcast for Sci-Fi.
Hmm.
And he's interviewing several people and I'm trying to remember at the end, he mentioned he was going to be talking to like David X. Cohen. He mentioned several, I can't remember them all, but anyway, this one is with Jonathan Frakes and I listened to the whole thing and it was great. It's only like 23 minutes long. Yeah. And they talk about him, his process of becoming, not interview, not inter. No, no, not interview. I was looking for audition. His audition process for the whole thing to become Riker. I know who he is. And
man, you know, the topic Wild is Bill. Trekman. Come on,
it's Wild Bill Riker, by the way. So anyway, so Adam asked him some questions. I wouldn't say they were hard or anything, but there was a few things that stood out for me that you know, I hadn't really listened to heard John Frakes talk about before. His interview process, actually getting into directing was a lot of during TNG. He learned a lot by sitting in on the audition process, the orchestral stuff, the orchestra stuff for the music for the show and all the stuff, the writer's sessions, all that kind of thing. And to get comfortable becoming a director, and he ended up getting his first director episode, which was?
I know. It's Data's daughter.
Yeah, Lol.
Yeah.
That's right. Offspring. And season three. So, which I like that episode. I was kind of cool and sad at some time. So he talks about that and some other stuff, and he.
Huh? No, go ahead.
Oh, and he also worked for Marvel back in the day. So go check that out. Listen to it. And you'll appreciate it. I'm looking forward to seeing what else Adam Savage talks to in the near future.
Hmm. Right, because one of the nice things about the interview is that it's clear that Adam's done his homework, that he asked some questions which kind of take Frakes by surprise. He goes, oh, wow, you knew about that? Which is the whole Marvel thing, which you'll have to listen to find out what the story is with that. But
yeah, there's a lot of women in your background that you, yeah. What, you know about that?
Well, that's the part they cut. That's after hours with that episode. Okay, very good. And let's turn things over to Chuck again.
Over to The Verge. We have the third episode of Star Trek Discovery aired this week. Well, last week. And at one point in the episode, Sonequa Martin-Green's Michael Burnham is tasked with reconciling two suites of code by Lieutenant Paul Stamets. I'm still making up my mind on that character. But we'll go into that later. Minor spoilers from Discovery. Here, we'll do the spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, we only need one. Thanks. In the show, Burnham claims the code is confusing because it deals with quantum astrophysics, biochemistry, and gene expression. And while the episode later reveals that it is related to the USS Discovery's experimental new mycelial network transportation system, Twitter user Rob Graham noted that the code itself is a little more pedestrian in nature. That's right. In the year 2256, Starfleet's latest state-of-the-art science vessel still runs on Windows.
You need Windows in a starship so you can see outside.
No. More specifically, It seems the decompiled code. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I suspect there are a lot of people like me. We're nerds. We are computer nerds. And when you throw code on the screen, we are going to look closely. Like in the Terminator, I believe that was 6502 assembler code. And this was not entirely legible, but I could tell it was not your typical, oh, look, it's JavaScript, or I'll put some CSS on the screen. So it was a little more advanced looking. But it seems to be decompiled code from the infamous Stuxnet virus, which is a particularly strange thing for a Starfleet vessel to be running on, given that the virus was identified back in 2010 as a weapon created to disable Iran's nuclear program.
Well, I have to admit, when it came up on the screen the second time I was watching the episode, I paused it. I was looking at it going, why am I doing this? I can't read code to begin with. How am I supposed to tell what's going on here?
You have no base of reference.
Hey, you know what? I do code and I didn't recognize some of that. I'm like, what?
Yeah, I mean, they did a pretty good job, but apparently someone did recognize it.
But this is, granted, if somebody tried really hard, they could have come up with something. The question is, how much effort do you throw into that? Because I believe this is commonly what happens. There's even a website, if I recall, this was several years ago, that posts screen captures from movies and television shows identifying what actual code, either language or specific program or whatever, that this screen is showing that has nothing to do with what they're talking about.
My question is this an Easter egg or is this just lazy production?
I'm not sure if it could be somewhat lazy production. It depends of whether or not they've modified it at all. But at the same time, you're going, are we going to put the dollars to try and come up with entire programming language for a screenshot of 10 seconds?
Oh, no, but let's develop the Klingon language.
Yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb. Yeah, since they came up with the whole Klingon language, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, in 2256 or whenever we are not going to be writing lines of code. This is right. Obsolete technology in a couple hundred years. So
that I would agree with.
I would come up with something pictorial and just draw lines on the screen and say it's an app.
But then if you come the error section, you just have like a face with a finger wagging back and forth. You
poop
know, like,
emoji.
No.
Like
going crossbones. It's going crossbones from.
I'm going to predict poop emoji is still going to be around in the future.
Well, since Patrick Stewart voiced one, that's clearly there will be.
Yeah, was that the skull and crossbones from Independence Day?
Yeah, there you go. All right, well let's head back. Since we were there early this evening, we're going to head back to Ticonderoga. Oh,
nice loop.
Like Ticonderoga. There we go. I said it.
Very good. William Shatner will visit Ticonderoga's Star Trek set.
When?
This is a story from the Times Union. Says, beam him up, Scotty. Set a course for Ticonderoga and put phasers on. Stunned?
Oh, they did there? Like we haven't heard that a million times before.
News that Captain Kirk himself. Humor. I'm doing the hands back and forth with Data. Humor.
It's a difficult concept.
I do not grasp this idea.
Captain Kirk himself, William Shatner, will be visiting the meticulously recreated Star Trek set tour in Essex County, May 4th through 5th, so that'll be 2018, inspires all sorts of rhetorical Trek flourishes, but proprietor and superfan James Colley summed it up in just one syllable. Huge! Or did he say huge? I'm not sure.
I think
sure.
He borrowed it from Trump.
I was making the whale reference, but okay.
Quote, this is the star of the franchise. There is nobody bigger than him, and he's absolutely, and he absolutely is the man. He's the captain, close quote, Colley said, open quote. It doesn't matter who fills the shoes in subsequent series. He is the star of Star Trek. The Canadian-born Shatner commanded the bridge of the USS Enterprise as Captain James T. Kirk on Star Trek, the 1966 through 1969 NBC series that promised to boldly go where no man has gone before, mm-hmm. and became a full-blown phenomenon in syndication that spawned multiple show-ups. Now, the follow-ups. The take down here to the part about the actual tour. So he's going to do the tour, and apparently he's never been to the set or any of the I don't think he's been to the recreation sets. During Shatner's visit, he'll be available for autographs, photos with fans, a meet and greet event, and a Q&A. Packages run from $85 for a tour and an opportunity to see William Shatner.
About photos or signatures.
Opportunity to see. Okay.
With an a la carte autograph at $80 a pop to $860 for a captain's gold ticket that includes a Friday night reception featuring the man himself.
Okay, that I might go for.
Then it gives information. So again, we always have all the links here in the show notes for the episode.
You would pay $800, Chuck?
And make sure I get a soundbite that has him saying the topic is track, of course.
Absolutely.
Oh, and before we go, can we do Technorama and
and just podcasting for dummies and comedy forecast and
everything.
Just keep
everything.
Doing this.
If you got a domain name set aside, just have them say something about it.
You know, you should have him read one, hello, you're listening to it. And then Technorama, comedy forecast, topic is track. And then you could just swap them in.
Yeah, but then you'd be the one that gets, hi, this is William Shatner, and you're listening to the topic is Trek.
You know what? I would take that. I would love that. Wow, $160.
Yeah. Well, All right.
Once in a lifetime, man. It's like flying over the Grand Canyon. No, you just got to do it.
It's actually the same. It's one of he's one of those people like Stanley. I paid the money to stand in line and give him my prayers and myself to get our picture with Stan Lee. And I had to stand in another line to get up there and get him to sign my comic book. I did get to shake his hand and basically tell him I'm a huge fan. Thank you for everything. And that's all I got to say to him, which is fine.
Yeah.
I didn't expect to have a conversation with him because he didn't know me from him. But yes, that I didn't pay $160, but yes, I would consider it. Now, getting that past my wife.
Yeah, I was gonna say perfect road trip until you have to run it past the better half.
Your wife would probably do it.
Yeah, probably would, but I don't know.
Yeah. And
have you met him, Clinton?
I have not. I've seen him at a convention. This was back the first time I saw Shatner at a convention was in Atlanta. It was for a Star Trek convention. It was 1978, so it was before the motion picture came out. They had, I think at that point, they had filmed it already, if I'm not mistaken.
The motion picture, okay.
But, I think I've seen him once or twice. Well, actually, I might have seen him in the New York Con in 77, but those New York cons, I went to them all the time, and it was just like a spinning dial of who was going to show up at any given time.
Right.
You just turn around and, hey, there's Grace Lee Whitney with George Takei and James Doohan. And, you know, it's just so he might have been at one of those. But
Chuck and I, you were I'm sure you were there. You saw him with Leonard Nimoy at Dragon Con.
2009. That's true.
Yep. Yeah.
That was fun. That was a fun. I watched the video of it not so long ago on YouTube, and it was fun to watch. Again.
All right. Well, no more fun. We'll move on to it. To our next story, and that's back to you, Craig.
Yes, and turns out we get just a slight bit more of Discovery.
Yay!
Before the break.
Oh, not in total.
Ooh. Yeah, there's a little break. So the first half of Star Trek Discovery will be extended to 9 episodes, which says that it was 8 before. Mm-hmm. So we get one extra episode, and they're also saying that, which I think it makes only sense, that Star Trek Discovery is breaking all of the all access records, which, well, how could it not?
That's good news.
I don't know where that was before. Yeah, it was good news. So the season 9 will be split after 9 episodes instead of 8. When the premiere date for the Star Trek Discovery was announced, CBS revealed that the 15 season episode would be broken into 2 chapters, with the first 8 episodes airing between September and November, and the final one airing, I'm sorry, the final 7 beginning in January of 2018. Then today they announced, or today as in on the 3rd of October, that there will be 9 episodes with the final chapter debuting. The final episode, wait a minute, I lost my place here.
Of the first part.
Today they announced that the first 9 episodes of chapter 1 debuting on November 12th.
So instead of the second 8 chapter, and 7, it's going to be 9 and 6.
Right.
Shorthand.
And my guess is they must have thought that, because I think when they announced 8, my guess is the way they were talking, that they were still in production on a lot of this stuff. And maybe somebody said, you know, 9 is a better place to break.
Yeah.
And so they probably just... That's the reason they bumped it to 9 instead of 8.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm sorry. I moved my mouse and I lost my place to where I was reading. I was looking for the date.
Especially when your browser decides to lag. It's like the ads are loading and you go to scroll and it doesn't scroll. Then you're reading and then it jumps.
Yeah, it jumps. That's right. So, and they also said that All Access sets yet another record. Only the first episode of Star Discovery aired on broadcast television. There will be no ratings for the rest of the series in the U.S. However, CBS did announce today that Discovery had again set high record for subscriber signups in a single week. CBS All Access daily growth and subscribers is up more than 200% year over year.
So I know that Netflix also doesn't release numbers, I don't think, for their shows. So in a lot of the rest of the world, it's streaming on Netflix.
Yeah.
Canada, I want to say it's on Space. I could be wrong. I don't know. Is Canada broadcast or is Canada subscription? I'm wondering if you get numbers out of Canada.
I think everything is subscription. I mean, whether it's streaming of some sort, but where it's streaming, I don't know. In Canada, I think it may be on Netflix. I'm not sure. So, but I know internationally, Discovery is on Netflix.
But in the story that we didn't have time to put in, just really quickly, though, that they are apparently very close on closing a deal for season 2.
Ooh, yay. So
we will see what happens with that.
One of the articles I read this week, they said it's going to be about 2 years before we get another next season. I'm like, what? Come on. Really?
Well, when you think about, think about the fact that it's really a 15-hour single story. And I think that probably is the issue. They talked in the article about that they had kind of settled on the story that they would like to tell in season 2. But then you have to write a 15-episode or however many episodes they would have for that season. assuming it's another serialized story, that it all has to be laid out before you begin. And I think that that's probably the lag time in there. Plus the fact that the production value is so high on the thing.
Yep.
It's essentially like making a 15-hour movie.
Yeah. No, I'm not knocking all that. I get that. I'm just like, 2 years, really? You know.
Yeah, but it's better than lag time between movies.
And hey, well,
it's a lot more. So
thank God we got the Orville. I just went there, didn't I?
Hey, Red Dwarf started up again. So there you go.
Why do I feel like you just handed an adult a pacifier?
Now it would be cool if they had feature films of Star Trek, not necessarily Discovery or anything, but feature films between the TV seasons the streaming seasons of Discovery. That would be cool.
You mean like CBS All Access just up and throws Final Frontier at your face?
The
interesting thing is that I don't know. I know that CBS All Access had a window that they had to stay out of after Star Trek Beyond premiered. Mm-hmm. There was a certain number of months, and I don't recall how long that was, that they were not allowed to premiere this series because apparently Paramount felt like that would be product confusion. Now, if Paramount goes through and does the next Star Trek film, the question that gets raised, okay, does that window open up again? Do they have to wait X number of months after the next movie comes out? I don't know.
I think that's a stupid thing because we had Star Trek in the theater.
And on TV.
We had Star Trek original series movies at the same time we had TNG on television.
I was going to say,
at that point it was all Paramount.
Yeah, I was going to say, TOS crew or the TNG crew, take your pick. They had movies in the theater seasons were on TV, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, or whatever. It was all over that stuff. So,
but like I said, I think the difference there was that was all Paramount at that point. There was no split. You know, Paramount now just is movies and CBS is television.
Well, there was a point when they merged or they got together. Yeah. All right. Fine. Whatever.
Yeah.
I
don't know the answer to that question. I don't know if all of a sudden, if it's established, are they now greenlit to, okay, great. It does. You keep your schedule, whatever you want to keep. We're now barreling ahead with what we're doing. I don't know.
Hmm. And wasn't there going to be a Khan series too?
Well, that's one of those. No plausible truth to that. It was this story going around. Nick Myers was talking about that he was working on something else Trek related. And there was I think a lot of this originated on these murky, you know, no source cited sites about, oh, it's going to be a Khan series. Oh, it's going to be this. Oh, it's going to be the replacement for Discovery. Oh, it's going to, and then it just like that takes off and has a life of its own.
See, I thought Brian Fuller had the idea with the Star Trek series that they would have other anthology kind of series, like they would have a Khan.
That was apparently one of the concepts for Discovery was that it would be an anthology series.
It sounds like more serialized now, so which is cool.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Speaking of cool, next story from Chuck.
Back to me.
Takes us back to the world of gaming.
Yes. LeVar Burton returns as Captain Geordi LaForge in Star Trek Online Series 14, Emergence. Season 14, Emergence of the free-to-play MMORPG. Star Trek Online was released today for the PC and will release later on Xbox and PlayStation 4. Season 14 features the return of Star Trek Next Generation's LeVar Burton, voicing Captain Geordi LaForge. Today's Season 14 update includes a new episode and a number of new features. At first, I was looking at that picture of Geordi sitting in the captain's chair, and he looked like a bad Hasbro toy. I was like, oh, wait, no. That's the
video game.
Yeah, that's the video game. There is a launch trailer if you click through to the website. Season 14, Emergence opens with a new featured episode, Melting Pot, continuing the story of the intensifying war with, this is going to.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, yeah, this is like on this day in history and technorama.
Right.
Intensifying the war with Zinkethi, Captain's journey to the Darnur colony of the Alpha Quadrant. This brand new colony world was established by the Kentari and Lucari. They're not twin brothers, but they sound like it.
But I play them on TV.
Recently right. joined forces to protect their ancient homeworld of Zinkethi. Lucari Captain Kumarki. He must be from Sweden.
That's okay. Just say the voice actor's name.
Voiced
just double
by
up on the vowels.
Kipley Brown and Captain Geordi LaForge, played by LeVar Burton, leads players on a mission to explore the new colony and see the newfound collaborative spirit between the Kentari and Lucari. While the tour and the colony look to be progressing well, the Zinkethi may have other plans of this for this world.
Dun, dun, dun.
I've actually installed Star Trek Online.
Oh, cool.
I played it a little bit. I found it kind of confusing because I don't have enough time to spend playing a game like you really get into it.
Yeah.
But I thought, oh, Star Trek Online, let's check it out. And then it's kind of neat. It was a little too freeform. I got lost in Starbase.
Why am I in the Delta Quadrant all of a sudden? How did this happen?
I was just on deck 3. Yeah. But it's kind of neat. I like some of the space battles were fun. Although I was sitting, I'm sitting here hanging on the photon button, kept shooting, and I'm like, okay, the tube's overheated. I can't shoot any or whatever it was. I was trying to I was not an efficient tactical officer. But I do like the designs they come up with the ships. You always see these alternative Star Trek ships. Always take everybody takes a little different
spin on them. And
yeah, like there's a picture right here with 4 nacelles, and it looks like almost like a TNG with a thick neck on the ship.
More anyway, like an Excelsior class almost.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So there's a bunch of differences. I like it. There's races all over the place and places, people to meet and things to do. So it's kind of fun. But I was like, oh, can I just jump to season 14 or do I have to play all through?
Yeah, jump up to season 10. No, wait.
It's like watching Supernatural. Oh my gosh, does it ever end? 15 seasons. What's wrong?
So
I'm
going to play around with it again and see. It's been a while since I played it. I'm probably like in season 1.
You'll get there eventually. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And our last story is there are only 3 TV shows that liberals and conservatives both like equally. This story comes to us from Business Insider. Wait for it.
Now you're just talking crazy talk.
Yeah, American liberals and conservatives are divided in many aspects of life, including television preferences.
You don't say.
But social media research firm Physiology suggests there are 3 major TV shows that both conservatives and liberal audiences like equally.
And that's a real site. Physiology does some serious social media mining.
Are you ready?
Yep.
Here they are. They are Dancing with the Stars, Star Trek Discovery, and The Orville.
Interesting.
Which means I can tell you right now, I like Dancing with the Stars because I watch it with Bonnie and I tweet her comments.
Mm-hmm.
Star Trek Discovery, and I watch The Orville as well. So I think you can tell my political leanings just from that information. All right. So anyway.
You bleeding heart.
You gun-toting bleeding heart. Okay. Physiology co-founder Ben Carlson pointed out that these 3 shows don't necessarily have a political flavor and suggests that probably has a lot to do with why liberals and conservatives both enjoy them.
What about America's Got Talent?
Dancing with the Stars, it's fun. There's all kinds of famous people dancing and learning how to and failing and then succeeding. That's something that's kind of universal, Carlson says. Carlson also remarked that he thought it was interesting that two of the TV shows enjoyed on both sides of the political spectrum were related to space and exploration and connections to Star Trek. Carlson says he felt longevity and the fact that its amazing storytelling is what pulls in conservative viewers into Star Trek, a show he felt had more traditional liberal themes. And also for the Orville, Seth MacFarlane's Star Trek spoof, Carlson credits its appeal to liberals and conservatives to the fact that it's something set in that world, but with humor. So I thought, you know, of all the shows you would think out there, and obviously this is a current survey because it's got Discovery and the Orville in it. It's not like this is happening now, that those would be the three shows.
Right. It's not NCIS Miami or it, very strange. There's a lot
I'm surprised America's Funniest Home Videos isn't on here, because who doesn't appreciate a shot of somebody getting hit in the nads when it's not you?
Well, what I think is interesting is since Tom Bergeron was also in episodes of Star Trek, all he's going to do is now get himself onto the Orville and he will be more popular than Tom Hanks.
Right.
That guy, I love him. I love everything he's in. I surely love him.
He'll be the
In Star Trek?
He'll be the Steve Guttenberg of our time.
I know he was in an episode of Enterprise, and I think he was in a second episode. Either it was of Enterprise or some other iteration of Star Trek. I'm pretty sure he was in two episodes. One of them more heavily made up than the other one, if I recall correctly.
Oh, here we go. I didn't even search for his name in Star Trek, and it says Tom Bergeron, Star Trek. Oh, no wonder he was heavily make-upped in both. Wow.
Well, but when he was talking, it was like you knew exactly who it was immediately. He wasn't disguising his voice.
So he was in Enterprise, the episode called Oasis, and also in Enterprise called episode called Demon. So it's both on Enterprise.
Okay.
And they both got heavy makeup on, but you can kind of look at the eyes on one and his mouth and kind of tell barely who it is. That's kind of funny.
All right. And that wraps up
the whole show.
Yes. Well, our subspace chatter. And now we're going to quickly move to our main mission. See how much we can get into our main mission here. And after that sound effect, we want to play the other one because we're going into spoiler alert.
Oh, again?
Spoiler alert.
Sure, why not?
Spoiler alert.
Two was plenty. Thank you very much. We now have two more episodes of Star Trek Discovery that have premiered. We have Context is for Kings and The Butcher's Knife Cares Not for the Lamb's Cry. We have our second pilot, if you will, in the first episode, Context is for Kings. And then we get to see the spore drive in action in the episode that just, I'll say aired, premiered, I guess is a better term for it, since it didn't really air anywhere. That's gentlemen, right. What are your aired opinions of our second version of Discovery? in almost as many weeks.
Right. I think my initial thoughts were, this is getting some legs. We're now off of the Shenzhou. We're into Discovery. We're finding out what their mission is. It is a complete story. Who's the white Klingon? What's his name? Vok?
Voke.
Vok.
He's a little more gullible than he should be. He's been left out there for 6 months. He's scrounging around the garbage heap. He doesn't want to go on board the Shenzhou to get their dilithium processor so he can get his ship up and running again. And here comes Cole in like an old friend. Actually, he starts out humble and then, you know, kind of stabs him in the back. So it'll be interesting to see what happens on the Klingon side. But the war is as we predicted. It's not a unified force. It sounds like it is, but just.
Yeah, essentially it is, but you know, he's saying just until we win and then everybody goes their own way.
Well, yeah, kind of, as long as it's unified under Cole and not Vok. But
yeah, exactly.
But I don't think Falk is naive or gullible. I think he's deep in his faith, and not prideful, but he didn't want anything to do with any of the human technology. So, I don't think he's gullible. I think he believes what he's doing.
I don't think he's.
He was very quick to believe, you know, when Cole shows up, oh, I'm going to kneel before you and, you know, accept you as the, you know, the torchbearer, and, you know, then I'll just help you whatever you want to do. It's like, really? I don't think that's, no.
That's not the Klingon way. I mean, I can understand respecting the rank and whatnot, but Vok was also too easily giving up information. Like, oh, and by the way, we're starving out here. So now Cole knows his weakness and knows how to jump on that. I mean, I thought that was pretty naive leadership in my but getting back to Discovery, we are learning what the spores are about and how they can be used. And when they brought that beastie on board,
actually, the tardigrade.
That's what I said. And Donna looked at me right before they called it that. They said it kind of resembles a tardigrade. I went, did I not just say that 10 seconds ago? She looks at me, how do you do that?
Hey, yeah. Well, that's exactly what Harrison said. I watched it myself Sunday, and then we watched it together Monday. And he's like, oh, it looks like a tardigrade. And then she mentions it, or no, he said it looked like a water bear. And then she mentioned same tardigrade. Thing. I was like, well, there you go. Yep.
Yeah, I thought at the end of the first episode, Context is for Kings, when it's in the force field in that bizarre room that Lorca has.
The menagerie.
Yeah. That when it came walking or came, you know, leaping toward it, I said, boy, that really looks like a tardigrade. And then it's like, so it's nice to know that they kind of come right out and say that that's what it looks like. Although I thought it was interesting that I was reading an article talking about how this couldn't possibly be real, that you couldn't, you know, you can't take a tardigrade. The article talked about this creature as if it was a tardigrade that had been
irradiated
somehow
or something.
Mutated to be large. And we're going, well, I don't think they really speculate that. Like, I think they were saying that they thought that the crew on the Glenn had somehow modified a tardigrade to make it that huge, and going,
no.
Then you just have a huge tardigrade. Right. It really wouldn't do anything for you.
No, I think it's just a coincidence of that, or not coincidence, but maybe they're related, the microscopic ones as well as the large ones, and they just happen to get one somehow. I don't know. Well,
or they can't live in space, so sure.
So from the information we know now, was the Glenn hooking the tardigrade up incorrectly?
No, I think it was, something went wrong. I mean, they were describing what happens if things go wrong. Because they're using all the same stuff that the Glenn had.
Yeah.
And it sounds like they really weren't, I don't know, did Stamets say he made any other modifications to anything?
No, not really.
So,
except for just integrating it with the ship.
Right, and trying to extend the range and blah, blah, blah.
But they used the equipment from the Glenn to do that. So something that they just happened to do wrong, I guess, that. So he might've made some modification, or perhaps you could make the argument that the bug in the code that Burnham found was a bug in the code.
Maybe it was the same code as the Glenn had.
So, right. And
if the Glenn and the Discovery were doing a similar mission, trying to use the spore drive, why weren't they sharing information?
Well, the idea, I believe, is that they were splitting them up so that it was kind of like pitting one against the other.
But they each had a common base knowledge of, we're putting the spores in these containers and we're trying to leverage that as somehow transport things from place to place. But I don't... Competitive isn't as functional as collaborative in most science.
But I think that's what was going on, because, you know, was it Strahl from the other ship was, you know, giving him a little piece of information, but would not go any further than that, saying, you know, there's advantage to not growing your own, and we're making a jump of that's much further than yours. But he wouldn't get into the details of it. So it's almost like I can't talk about it, but I'll hint at it.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on. And maybe you can extrapolate from that what we're doing.
When Michael Burnham said, you know, you might be looking at your next pilot, my mind immediately went to Farscape.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Right.
So do you think that Laurel is trying to play all sides against the other? That's the female Klingon. I couldn't quite tell because she says that she's of two houses. One is T'Kunva and the other one is
Moravi.
And she describes it as being, Moravi. She described it as being the house of lies and deceivers. And I'm going, wait a minute, you're saying that's where you're from.
I knew she was up to no good the moment she opened her mouth. When she started cozying up the Vok, I went, something's up with this woman. And she strikes me as someone who's just looking out for her own best interest. But yet at the close of Butcher's Knife, she still seems to be helping. I'm not sure how they're going to get off a frozen waste of a Shenzhou, but
she just said she had a raider.
She said she had a shuttle.
Oh, okay. That's right. Yeah. She did say that at the very end, but how far is that going to take them? Does it have warp drive? Or are they just going to be going putt, 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 putt?
The shuttle depends on how this technology is, you know, compatible across things, because the shuttles on the Discovery, I believe, have warp drive. So it's possible that the Klingon shuttles have warp drive as well.
So this is right before Enterprise, and I keep thinking about...
No, this is... No, Next Gen, the original
TOS,
series.
TOS, that's what I meant.
Right.
Sorry.
Right.
Between Enterprise and TOS. And I keep thinking about canon. We never heard anything about... Something is going to drive...
Right.
This technology into the ground.
Right.
That's my feeling. It's going to be a box in a warehouse somewhere.
Yeah. That this is going to, and I think that we're starting to see hints of how it could possibly go wrong, because you're doing what you're doing by torturing a creature or severely hurting it. And I think that
that's sustainable.
That's not going to go well in the long run.
And Captain Lowry? What's Captain?
Lorca.
Lorca.
Yeah. Landry is the one who said, I'm just going to open up this force field. And
yeah.
Yeah.
No problem. Stupid.
So anyone else think that Lorca looks like Dustin Hoffman?
No, Chuck, just you.
Maybe a little bit.
I keep seeing Rain Man at the helm, man.
He looks like Malfoy to me.
Really? Tom, can't remember his last name now. Anyway.
So
Bergeron.
Tom Bergeron. Tom Bergeron in another mask. See, he is on all those shows.
Hey.
I'm floating out a hypothesis that I'm hoping I'm wrong about, but I figured I would float this out there, that Tilly is a character that we're all relating to.
She's going to die.
Well, either she's going to die or, hey, let's put someone in with Burnham who'll be buddy-buddy with her, keep an eye on her with no one else, you know, suspecting that she is a sleeper, by Lorca.
I think what happened was...
I'd like that not to be true.
Yeah, I think
I think that up front.
The impression I got was that, hey, Michael Burnham, here's your quarters. Oh, by the way, and they're kind of wink, wink, nod, nod in the office going, let's put her in with Tilly. Because Tilly's not going to shut up. She's not going to want to talk. She's a Vulcan background. There's no way this is going to work. So I think they just stuck them together to annoy each other.
So this is Landry's revenge from the grave.
The odd couple.
Right. Hey, by the way, did you not think it was a little weird to hear the Klingons ate Georgia?
Well, remember that they said they were starving. So
the
question is, do they eat their enemies, which we didn't really have as something in canon as far as I know, or is this like, it's meat, we're starving, we're going to eat anyone who's dead.
Enemies first.
It wasn't cold in there, so they had to come to that conclusion pretty quick before the meat spoiled.
Well, just hang it outside for a while. I don't know.
Put it out with
flash frozen. So.
Yeah,
this meat's got frostbite.
Freezer burn.
What did you think of the actual concept of them actually doing the jump and just they could jump anywhere they wanted to go?
And got it wrong the first time?
Well, they got it wrong the first time because they weren't hooked into Ripper.
Right.
Just kind that's of not Corvan 2, is it?
Yeah. Yeah. Either that it's or really, really hot.
We're really, it's really the late. Summer. The Klingons just toasted them.
Man, right. That lithium goes up like a firework, doesn't it?
Harrison was impressed the way it looked because the ship kind of flips in a circle, you know, or on its axis.
That's kind of reminiscent of where have I seen that before? Was that the Red Matter thing? Or, anyway.
Oh, you're talking about the little ship that Spock was in?
That one, you know, it's kind of the part of the ship spun around itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought it was kind of cool. I liked how the dishes started moving. I went, oh, that's why they got that separation in there, you know. Kind of, I don't know why it spins or what the technical reason is for that, but.
Right. I mean, I did notice that they said some particular things just before it went on. It's like the excess energy cavitation system. Well, they said the person said that, and then we cut to the outside and the hubs are spinning. So I don't know whether that phrase and that action are related. Because cavitation would indicate that you're trying to compensate for something to reduce something. So it's like, you know, trying to reduce the cavitation of a propeller on a submarine to not have it produce so many bubbles, which is caused by the pressure change around the propeller. So is there somehow that's supposed to be dealing with energy produced by the spore drive? I mean, I'm not sure.
Mm. Well, if it doesn't work out, they can certainly open a restaurant on that.
They can indeed. The revolving view of everything.
Or a carnival ride.
Although notice at the outside, it's like the top, I believe the top is spinning of the sections, both of the center hub and the outside hub, but not the window. So it's like the plates on the very top are spinning, but not the entire sections.
I hope your quarters aren't located on.
Yeah, it's like they're here. No, they're here. No, they're here.
Oh,
no,
my stuff's up against the wall again.
Stupid spore drive. I hate you. I hate you.
Can't find my room at the end of the night. It's even worse when I was drunk on Romulan ale.
Imagine walking in, all your stuff slung up against the wall. Dang it. Black alert. Oh, crap.
How do you know when the black alert is on? The klaxons would be black.
Yeah.
Yeah, run. Yeah, silent running. Whoop, whoop, whoop. Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, so we'll be talking more about Star Trek Discovery next time when we come back. Could because be. We'll have two more new episodes, including the first appearance of Harry Mudd in the series.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that. It looks interesting.
So let us close up our main mission and do a very quick warp speed roundtable to get us out of here. All right. Our question actually comes in.
That was quick.
For warp speed. Yeah, that's warp speed. There we go. This is a suggestion from listener Diane. And for warp speed roundtable, I'm going to ask all of us here, which one of these would you pick as a pet and why? Your choices are a Salot, a Seti eel, or a Horta. Chuck, go!
None of the above. I want a Klingon Targ.
That's not an option.
I want a Klingon Targ. I want a Klingon Targ for Christmas.
I wanted a neural parasite.
No! You must choose.
Well, I'm not picking the Seti eel. What value could that have? That's just going to end in disaster. The Horta, it's kind of tough, man. They just keep eating through your house and your walls and your the hill behind the house. I'm going to go with the sellout.
Okay. Craig?
I think I'll go with the Horda, because I'm forced to choose one of these.
You don't have to choose something different.
Well, I was going with the Neural Parasite or even Magato.
Nope, you must choose.
Choose one of the three. Diane will give us three other choices next week.
The Horda. I guess I'll go with the Horda.
Okay.
No kill.
Well, my answer is, just to make sure that we've got all the bases covered, I'm going to go with the city eel because I can always use something to help clean that inner part of your ear. You know, you don't want to put a Q-tip. Just put that in there. It opens everything up for you. It really does.
Yeah.
So
opens you up to suggestion is what it does.
So the answer is one of each.
Yay, we win.
Yay. So that about wraps it up. It's time to boldly go that away until next time.
That way.
That away.
No, that way.
If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you, so you can follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek, visit our Facebook page, or visit thetopicistrek.com. And be sure to check out our other mostly non-Trek-related podcasts. The ones that we work on are Technorama and Comedy Forecast. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek, don't put on the red shirt.
Or take it off.